Blaine and Mickey, 104.5 The Zone, hour number two here, man. It's Thursday afternoon, which, as our friend Brent Doherty used to say, it's practically the weekend. So it's basically the weekend already. You're halfway through this show, more than halfway. John Glennon said to join us here in about 20 minutes or so. We'll catch up with JG, the latest on the Preds, who have just been rolling. Goodness gracious. I thought they were the hottest team in the NHL. I think there's maybe one team that's a point better than them or so over the last month. Blaine, I saw this earlier. This was actually on the Preds website. I was reading the game day story. The Preds, over the last month, have gone from 10 points out of a playoff spot to 4 points up as the number four seed in the Central Division. They got 12 games left to go. I mean, you've been on a lot of teams in your life. To have a team come together and gel like that with all the guys injured has been a pretty amazing thing to watch, because they're not doing it with all the stars. I mean, they're doing it with guys some guys you'd never heard of, rookies, young guys, you know, journeyman guys. It's been an exciting thing to see this team come together.
Yeah, no question about it. You know, you just wish it came together, and then maybe, you know, and they had some leaks here or there, and then the taxi squad and backup guys and role players stepped their game up for a limited amount of time, and then the vets came back. It kind of was a little different in that, you know, the competition from the young players that were playing actually then made the veteran players raise up their game.
Yep.
Because they feel that heat. They get that pressure too. They go yep. watch the tape, and the coach is saying, "Hey, good job right here. That's exactly what we want. See that, Bishop? That won't be you again if you don't get out there and play like that, you know?" So, yeah, it's implied message that youngster can do. But experience and with that kind of intensity as they come back, they seem like they put it all together. Paul looks like a genius now.
Yeah.
Leave it alone. Patient through the trade. Yeah. And didn't touch anything. And now they're on a roll. And then they played great there right after the trade deadline, and then beat Tampa Bay, where, you know, blew them out. I mean, so that was, you know, like, wow. Like, it might have been a relief amongst the players that, okay, this is our group. Let's roll now.
Yeah. Seven.
Doing well. 7-2, right? I mean, it was woo. So, hey, man, hats off to the Predators. Always want them to do well, and glad it's working out, at least us for now. I mean, it's not like to say they're going to continue to go on this great winning streak, but the signs all going up, even if they have a blimp in the road.
No doubt. We've had some amazing discussions today. We learned this recruiting nugget from Blaine Bishop. When you go and you take your kid on recruiting trips, if mom is tall, they look at mom. Maybe to see, okay, like, she's 5'10". This kid's got a chance to be taller than they are now, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't know that. I'd never heard that. Yeah. So then we got to talking about, like, how do Giants come from regular-sized people? Dave is actually calling from Ringgold, Georgia, I believe. I think he's one of these people with a giant child. Dave, thanks for checking in.
Grandparents?
Yeah. Hey, well, how does this happen, Dave? Tell us.
I have no idea. I'm 6'3". His mom was 5'10". We're actually from Dixon, down there close to you guys. But he is 16 years old in the 10th grade, and he's 6'8 and 295.
Now, 6'3 and 5'10 is pretty tall, but he's what? My gosh.
Dixon football could use tall? Him.
No, neither one of them. On my side, we're over 5'9".
Wow.
So, yeah.
It can happen. Man, it's just, wow, he got the, must have been what he was eating.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, when I ask him what he wants to eat, people ask me what I feed him, and I say whatever he wants. And then whatever's left, I get.
I wonder what that grocery bill looked like. You don't have to tell us. Oh. Man, I know it. I can't imagine how I used to eat when I was in high school. Oh, my God. I can't imagine if I was 6'8", 300. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Of course, he plays football. But he's a big old boy, but he's a straight-A student. Just one of the best kids I've ever seen in my life. You know,
where's he go to school?
Yeah.
It's in Ringgold, Georgia. It's called Heritage High School.
Okay.
Well, that's like winning the genetic lottery, you know? I mean, that's if you have some athletic ability, or heck, even to a certain extent, and especially if the young man's great in school, which it sounds like he's a crackerjack student too, but holy cow, I mean, that's winning the genetic lottery. Your child being 6'8" in the 10th grade, that's a, you know, and it sounds like he's not just focused on ball, he's focused on the books too, but sounds like this is a name we need to remember. We may be talking about him on the show for years to come.
Yeah, they measured his wingspan last week, and it was 8'1".
Oh, my gosh.
My gosh.
He's got all the genetics, that's for sure. So just hope.
What sport does he like best, football or basketball, or what does he like best?
He doesn't play basketball. He's into football. He does like he throws the discus and track and the shot put and track.
Okay.
So,
man, you're doing the right thing.
Football's his thing.
Dave, hey, man. Well, good luck to him and to you. We got a text saying Dixon County football hasn't had a winning record in a decade. They could really use him. So if you get ready to move back to Middle Tennessee, I'm sure they would welcome him with open arms.
Yep. Born at Baptist Hospital.
Oh, good stuff. No. Thank you for the call, Dave. Thank you for listening. All right.
No doubt. Yeah, my son was born in Baptist, too.
Actually, my daughter was born there.
Oh, yeah. You just now hit you.
I'm like, wait a second. I know all about that. We got another call. That's a parent-kid discussion. Stan from Nashville. Stan, are you the parent of a Giant as well?
No, can you hear me?
Yes, sir, we can hear you.
I'm not. I did play college and a little pro ball, but to hear the guy say that he's quote only 6'3" and the mom's only 5'10".
That's still
woman,
tall.
Yeah,
a 5'10" woman on a college recruiting trip is like the goose with the golden egg. Okay, that's not short for a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but I played with lots of guys as Blaine did with 6'5", 6'6", mom's 5'9", dad 6'2". I don't know what the math is on that, but it kind of rubbed me the wrong way when the guy says, oh, well, we're not really that tall. Now, granted, his kid is ginormous.
Right.
But 5'10 is not short for a woman. That's all I got.
Yeah, 5'10 mixed with 6'2, your kid's going to at least be 6'5". You got to think it's going to be or taller. Yeah, I get what he's saying, but yeah, man. Gene Poole, watch this. How tall are you, Lucas, and how tall are your parents?
I'm 5'11". I've surpassed my parents. They're like my mom's probably like 5'6" or so. My dad's about 5'9" or 10".
Okay. Imagine what the 6'8" kid eats. Blaine, we've talked about this before. I told you, when I graduated from high school, I weighed 127 pounds. After my freshman year of college, I remember coming home and somebody told me, you gained weight. I weighed 133 and I'd grown 2 inches and I still weighed 133. But I could eat like 2 Big Macs, a large order of fries, an apple pie when it had like the lava inside the crust that would just burn your face off when they used to make them like that. Yeah, that large soda. I could eat a large pizza by myself. And I weighed 127 pounds. I can't imagine what a 6'8", 300-pound kid eats. I mean, just to keep him going, what would that kid eat?
I don't think I ate as much as you. My appetite was almost going on a regular. It's like I would only come to the house just to eat. I'd be outside and I'm like, hey man, I'm hungry. I go back. Then I'm scarfing it down, man. So I don't think I ate as much as you, but I did weigh 175 pounds when I graduated high school, not 133. I weighed 135 my freshman year though. So I got to do that.
This is a true story. I had a buddy in high school who weighed 10 more pounds than me, who was a guard on our football team. He weighed 137 and played guard. That's how small town and small. Yeah. If I'd weighed 175 pounds, Blaine, I would have been the nose tackle and I would have been an offensive lineman, even at 5'6" or whatever I was, because nobody weighed 175 pounds.
You'd be tough as nails, though. I told you my offensive linemen were 200 max.
Little dudes. Max. Tough, mean.
Mean son of a gun. Wrestlers, all wrestlers.
No doubt. Hey, we got to wrestle our way out of this segment here. John Glennon said to join us next, talking red hot preds. talking. Well, ask him about Eddie George, the TSU. We got lots to talk about with the man from Broadway Sports. That's next on Blaine and Mickey 104.5. Blaine and Mickey 104.5, The Zone. Got Glenn set to join us here in a couple of minutes. We'll get him on the phone. Jadeveon Clowney signed with the Browns yesterday. We were teasing this a little bit earlier.
Acting like a clown.
1 year deal, $8 million up to 10, made about 13 for the Titans last year. He made the Pro Bowl 2016, 17, and 18. 2 years ago, he missed three games. Then last year, he missed half the season. Three sacks total for him, all in 2019, none last year. There were a bunch of quotes from him that people were talking about. This is one of them. "I've been getting double teamed an awful lot in this league," Clowney said. "So I'm looking forward to playing with someone dominant on the other side who can draw a double team and maybe make me go one on one." I mean, you're supposed to be a great player, Blaine. You're supposed to be able to take that double team. You're Clowney, first round pick overall.
Here's the difference, and I'm bringing him up because there was an incident this weekend. I mean, this past day. Aaron Donald ain't talking about, "I need me a great player on the other side." And there's a reason why he over hitting people in the eye, dotting eyes over there.
Allegedly.
I don't know about that story, about if that's true or what happened with Aaron Donald. But, man, that guy did not look good. That he looked like he got hit by Mike Tyson in his prime.
Yeah, in Punch Out.
Yeah, I think Aaron Donald is going to get a little trouble on that one. But if that's all true. But, Clowney is kind of, you know, he's got that prima donna to him. You can tell. He's not that elite pass rusher. He'll never be that. Just not his skill set. Now, you go back and look at his season. He dropped an interception. He missed a whole bunch of sacks. So his numbers could look pretty formidable in a game. Let's say if he had four sacks, two calls, fumbles, and an interception. And it would have been for a touchdown, probably, too. I remember he dropped it right in hand. Could have had two different ones, but that one, it was dead in his hands. It was like you couldn't have drew it up any better for a touchdown. Then we'd be sitting here saying, and it was, those are all close plays, saying, you know what, in eight games, he did produce. But the almost don't get it. And people look at the numbers and they go, it just wasn't enough, even though he was very disruptive and kind of, a little out of control and undisciplined at times, but you know, you let great players take risk. I mean, I was listening to Ryan Clark this morning and people let this slip through the cracks, but he said, well, you know, Troy Polamalu would blitz when he's supposed to be playing cover three. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That wouldn't have flied on our squad. That wasn't going to work. Nobody was getting away with none of that.
Yeah.
But see, he would compensate and deal with it for great players. Junior Seau would do the late great Junior Seau would do the same thing. So, you know, you can say that in one sense, and he believes he's a great player. And if the coaches are scheming for him to do plays like that, then, hey, then they believe it. So, hey, with Myles Garrett on the other side, I wouldn't be shocked if he had a big year, though. I would, or even on the same side. So I wish we was playing him, though. Maybe we'll play him in the playoffs.
Well, this feels like a couple teams that are headed for the playoffs for sure. That Browns team last year was, gosh, they were fun to watch, man. Somebody was talking about this Clowney signing, what great value it was. Yahoo Sports, long article about what great value. You see great value?
$8 million?
Yeah. 8 up to 10 with incentives. So let's say 8, and then depending on what he can do to get to the 10. I don't consider that great value, especially with bulky knees and, you know, he played 8 games last year. He missed games the year before. He's only played 16 games once ever in his career. Only hit 16 games. Now, that's not to say that he
– but that's why you get him and send him late in contract. And,
yeah.
You know, it was just kind of interesting just to hear his thought process. And I get it. This is a different era. This is not the old school like I was talking about yesterday. I mean, like, I can't imagine McNair saying that he had a meniscus tear and he couldn't play and I got to look and get it fixed. I don't think that happened. Eddie George played with a messed up toe and foot for almost a whole season. He's up there stuttering and falling. There was no way he was not going to play with a steel shank in his shoe.
Yeah.
And then he had surgery after the season. He never made any excuses of why, you know, he didn't have the burst he needed. I mean, they're just – so in this day and age, they do a little bit better job of maybe, let's say, protecting their long-term, you know, health maybe than, you know, the guys that played in my era. So two.
I seem to recall you had a meniscus tear too, right? Just cut the thing off. I'll see you at the end of the season, right?
Yeah, exactly. I just don't, you know, but the mindset of this generation of players, it's not to, you know, bag on them for any reason. They're just, you know, they're not gonna fight through an injury because they feel like it's gonna hurt them in the long run, as far as not just health wise, but, you know, getting that contract, and his contract was up. So he felt like, now my number's gonna look horrible and I can't say, oh, I was playing with a hurt knee. So I get it. So let's see what he does with Cleveland with a great player that's making $150 million on the other side. And that could be a motivating factor too by itself, by the way.
Yeah.
When you're on a team with a really good player and he's somewhat the same position as you, and you know he was the first pick of the draft just like you, you want to say, okay, put us right next to each other and see what we look like on tape. That's motivating in itself. Man, woo. Yeah, I got motivated real quick when I was right next to Brian Dawkins. I said, uh-oh, I'm getting old. Brian Dawkins is up there flying in the air, and I'm looking at the tape like, why is he flying in the air? Wait a minute. He is flying in the air. He can freaking fly. I was like, I'm never doing that. Nah, I love blitzing and all that, but I'm not jumping in the air. No, the hang time was not there anymore.
John Glennon joins us. Now, John Glennon has seen the same picture that I have in the press box. There's a picture in the press box of you jumping over Mark Brunell's head. So let's don't say you couldn't fly. There's a picture of you jumping over Brunell's head.
But what I'm getting at is we got to remember the year that was and the year I was at when I was with Brian Dawkins. And literally like 4 years later, and it went, whoa, don't do that. And then every time I would think about doing it, I go, my body can't do that anymore. Don't do that. So it gets scary out there.
I think you're selling yourself short, Blaine. I think you're selling yourself exactly. short.
You said the proper words, selling myself short.
Well, I was going to say for a shorter guy who had a little bit of a bow-legged situation going on there, you had some pretty serious hops there. I can remember seeing some pretty athletic moves from Blaine Bishop in the years.
Yeah, back in the day, I did all right. Hey, now we wanted to know, because we were talking about Virginia, and you're the first person I think of. Virginia, yep. John Glennon.
Maybe the only person, right?
Well, I said Ralph Sampson, too, so I didn't want to. Yeah. But where did you guys overlap at any time? Were you a freshman when he was a senior, or you were after him or before him? What was the case?
Big Ralph, you mean?
Yeah, Ralph Sampson.
Big Ralph preceded me. He was I actually got there the year after Ralph graduated. Which was, of course, disappointing. But the good news was that Virginia actually went to the Final Four my freshman year without Ralph Sampson.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember a guy by the name of Olden Polonese.
Oh, yeah. Polonese, number 24.
Yeah. Yeah, he went out and played in the NBA, and they went to the Final Four, and they almost made it to the championship game that year. They lost in overtime to Houston by Slamma Jamma in the semifinals that year.
Oh, okay. All right. Real quick then, before we move forward with Mickey, who would you say, whether football, basketball, or maybe even outside of that, is the most famous athlete from Virginia?
I think you just named it.
Talking about Ralph Sampson?
I think you'd have a hard time beating Ralph. Now, there's a number of NFL players, like, you know, both of the Barbers, Rondé Barber, Tiki Barber, were from the state of Virginia as well.
Iverson.
Herman Moore.
Allen Iverson. Herman Moore is another good one.
Michael Vick, he's from Virginia.
Mike, you're
the state, not the school. I mean,
just the University of Virginia, but not Virginia. Okay.
Yeah, but boy, I think and it's so disappointing, you know, for me that Ralph Sampson didn't get to play as long as maybe, you know, everyone would have liked, because he got his career was cut short by knee injuries. Because I really think he would have been one of the all timers, but I think you'd have a tough time beating him. But certainly the Commonwealth has produced a few good athletes over the years.
Yeah, no doubt about it. We're on with Ed Glennon Sports, JG John Glennon with Broadway Sports Media.
Let's go from the hardwood to the ice, John. The Preds, they just keep rolling. 13 of 16 they're getting contributions from dudes who get called up or the guys you've never heard of. And then that guy scores a goal, Tanner Janot. It's just one thing after another. I saw the Preds actually put in their own release for the game today. A month ago, they were 10 points out of a playoff spot, and now they got a 4-point cushion in fourth place. They did that in a month.
It's incredible, you know, and they got to give a little bit of thanks to the Blackhawks, too, for kind of falling apart during that stretch. But,
is that.
Right, but the main point, certainly, yeah, this team has just absolutely turned it around, and what makes it even more interesting in my mind, too, is that they've done it with a number of guys, you know, that have been out of the lineup. You know, because of injury. I mean, Forsberg is still out. Tolvanen has been out recently. You know, Ryan Ellis was out for a long time. Of course, Matt Duchene is out. You know, so it's not the complete team that they envisioned. But, you know, I think they're playing consistently. I think they're doing, you know, the kind of things that John Hines wants every night. He's finally got them in the system he wants. They've got the hottest goaltender in the league in UC Saros. And as you said, they're getting all kinds of contributions on offense. You know, it's, whether it's veterans, guys like Arvidsson are picking it up now. And these new guys, you know, as you said, just the other night, you know, Rem Pitlick just had a few games. All of a sudden, he's got 2 points in a game. Tanner Janot comes in, scores a goal. We know what Tolvanen's done as a rookie, too. So really quite a turnaround and you know, another big challenge tonight. They're playing a Carolina team that they haven't been able to beat all year in four tries. So another big one tonight.
With John Glennon, Philip Tomasino, the latest to get his shot for these Predators. And every guy that gets called, it used to be every new guy would score a goal in his first game. And now it's just every guy some guy they drafted 4 years ago shows up and scores a goal within his first couple of games. But Philip Tomasino, I guess the latest guy to get added to the mix.
Yeah, he is. I don't think we'll see him tonight. You know, he's on the roster now. He's been called up from Chicago in the AHL. John Hines said earlier today they'll probably stick with the same lineup they had the other night. Can't blame him for that. They're winning with this lineup. But, yeah, there's a lot of intrigue. I mean, this is a first-round pick. The Preds' first-round pick in 2019 is Philip Tomasino. He has been lighting it up as a 19-year-old. In the American Hockey League this year, I think 20 points in 18 games. Very offensively skilled guy. You know, the Predators haven't – the reputation for the Predators over the years has been they've always done a good job of producing defensemen and goalies to a certain extent also. But high-scoring forwards have not, you know, been the Predators' forte in terms of development. This is a guy who could really change that. So I think eventually we're going to see him in the lineup, and I think the Preds are going to be interested to see, you know, whether they just want to kind of give him a little bit of a shot, a little taste of the NHL and see how he reacts, or, you know, if he gets in there and starts lighting it up here, all of a sudden he could be a fixture in the lineup going forward as well.
With John Glennon at Glennon Sports with Broadway Sports talking Preds and Titans and all sorts of stuff, Virginia sports history.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You know, all those guys from Virginia are smart. So I don't know if that pertains to all Virginia people, but
I bring the average down a little bit. It's true. I pull it way down.
But David, yeah, Paul is not from Virginia or went to Virginia, but he seems to look like he made the right call by not doing too much of anything. And he kept up with the history of doing some small move here on trade deadline. I mean, do you think this is sustainable, what they're doing? And we're not talking about they're just going to go on a run and not lose a game. They're going to have some bumps in a row, but they have now figured out the scheme and the system and everybody's role. It looks like they're on the same page regardless of win, lose, or draw. So what are your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I do think it's a bit of a gamble in some ways that David Poile made here. You know, what he is saying is that he believes very much in this year's team. He is convinced what they've been doing in the last month, and he wants to give this team the players who've kind of busted their butts on this winning streak and the coaching staff who helped turn things around. He wants to give them a chance to make a splash, to make the playoffs and maybe pull an upset or two. You know, he thinks it's kind of fair that these guys have sort of earned that right. So instead of breaking up the team at the trading deadline and trading some of his top assets and maybe getting some future draft picks or prospects, he decided to stick with this team. Now, you know, again, what he's saying is he's confident in them. He apparently does not see the need for a significant rebuild, which might have been the case, you know, as late as a month ago. The only way this backfires, I think, you know, there's a couple ways it could backfire. Mm. If they don't make the playoffs at all this year, you know, all of a sudden it's not going to look too good that you didn't pick up any future assets. Or, you know, if the guys that are on contracts that expire soon, you know, whether it's this year or the next year, the guys that you might have been able to trade and pick up some good prospects, if they end up walking for little in return or nothing in return after this year or next, then it doesn't look, you know, too good either. But, you know, if the Preds can make the playoffs, have a decent showing for themselves, and if they're able to retain some of these guys, as David Poile hopes to, in terms of like, you know, an Ekholm, a Forsberg, Mikael Granlund, you know, then I think you're going to look okay for standing pat at the deadline, because I think he likes the combination of what they have right now of these veterans and the young guys that are coming into the lineup.
We're on with John Glennon with Ed Glennon Sports. I guess moving on to, I guess, the NFL and this offseason, no working out, virtual deal. What are your thoughts on this, JG?
Well, it's my thoughts are this. I think it sounds like it's a great idea if you're a well-established player or if you have your spot in the starting lineup. Hey, this is a great idea. You don't have to work. You're probably going to be set in the lineup anyway, and you give younger players coming in less time to work in the system to make themselves better. So, hey, if I'm a veteran, I'm saying, hey, thumbs up to no off-season work. Why change things if I feel comfortable where I am? Now, on the other hand, if I'm a young guy who just got drafted, or if I'm a bubble guy on the roster, or a guy who wants to work my way up the depth chart, I want to be in there as often as I can. I want to do everything I can to, you know, to make myself better and to get more playing time and ultimately earn a better contract, make more money in the thing that I do for a living. So I think you can look at it both ways. And I think these younger guys have to be smart, you know, about what they're doing. You know, it's one thing. It's probably very easy to say, sure, I'll kick back and do virtual workouts for the offseason. That sounds good to me. But, you know, you don't want to, you know, hurt yourself in terms of making yourself better, you know, and giving yourself a better shot, as I say, either making the roster in the first place or moving up the depth chart.
No doubt about it. We're on with John Glennon of Glennon Sports and Broadway Sports Media.
John, big story this week, Eddie George back in the news, Tennessee State in the news. Great story about him saying they called him and he said no, and then they kept talking. And now here we are, Eddie George, head coach at Tennessee State, Jeff Fisher involved in some capacity, putting together a bunch of big names we've heard with the coaching staff. But I got to admit, I was a little bit surprised when this crossed my path.
I agree with you, you know, because we've seen Eddie George kind of dabble into a number of different things since leaving football, you know, obviously with the, you know, the acting and drama and so forth, and, you know, things like real estate. I mean, all kinds of things that Eddie George has gotten into. You know, he's a very intelligent guy and you know, has not lacked for opportunities. But I don't think, you know, and maybe I'm wrong about this, but I don't recall Eddie George saying very often over the years, if I could only get back into coaching, you know, that's
love. Yeah.
You know, maybe I missed that, but I don't think he said that too often. That said, you know, I think we all know what kind of guy Eddie is, that he's got a great head on his shoulders, that he's a very committed guy, that he's not going to take this kind of thing lightly and just say, you know, put this on my resume and you know, maybe I'll do some, you know, high profile recruiting and let the assistants handle things. You know, Eddie is the kind of guy who is really going to, you know, jump into this and stay committed. And I think it's great for, obviously, it's great for Tennessee State. I mean, talk about incredible, you know, profile and publicity for the school and for the football program. And as you mentioned, Mickey, not only is Eddie George coming in, but when you look at the cast of guys he's assembling, you know, for his coaching staff, man, there's a lot of youngsters out there that are, you know, going to take a look at these guys coming in and what experience they had in the background and say, I like Tennessee State. I like what they're offering. I like the, you know, this incredible NFL experience that this staff has. I'm going to give them a shot, even though some of these big, you know, maybe some of the Power Five schools are looking at me too.
Well, Rod Reed.
Well, I was going to ask you, I was going to say, how much does this affect his legacy? Good or bad? I mean, when it's over with.
I think it depends on what the record is going to be.
It does.
You know, certainly, I mean, because Eddie's got such an incredible legacy. I mean, you know, and everything he's done, it's been a thumbs up sort of situation. But you're right, like, you know, if Eddie comes in and things kind of go okay or, you know, not so well despite his presence and this new staff, then I think, you know, people are going to be saying, well, you know, why did Eddie bother saying yes? You know, it's clear, he wasn't cut out to be a coach. And that, you know, maybe that's a lingering memory at that point. On the other hand, if he turns things around and if guys like Eddie and Deion Sanders, do some great things for the HBCU schools, boy, that's a great thing to have for his legacy. Yep. and sort of the historic, mark for his legacy as well. So, you know, it probably will all come down to wins and losses, on the football field for Tennessee State.
Okay. Yeah. I was just going to say this on the way out too. Rod Reed had talked about it in his final press conference about budget constraints and things that he had dealt with. Hey, man, mm-hmm. I'll just say this. If you're a Tennessee alum, Tennessee State alum, expect your phone to ring from someone or go to the mailbox and just wait. You're going to get a letter asking for money. They're going to need money to fully execute this plan that's in place.
Right. And if you're a sponsor, or a ticket holder, aren't you probably more likely to say, Eddie George, I'll throw in a few dollars for Eddie. You know, nothing against Rod Reed, who was an excellent coach and well liked.
Awesome, but, dude.
You know, with Eddie George coming in there and some of the other big names, and I have to think also that when Eddie George was hired, you know, he had the leverage because Tennessee State was coming after him. I have to think Eddie George said, "Well, I'm going to need this. I'm going to need this. I'm going to need this." You know, and put that in writing. So I think if Eddie was smart, he's probably taken some steps in that direction already.
Same thing John Glennon did with Broadway Sports. Just named his demands. They put him down. He's their number one guy for Titans and Preds at Glennon Sports. Follow him for all the latest. John, thank you, man. Virginia legend.
Thanks, guys.
John
Appreciate
Glennon.
It.
Thank you, brother. Yes, sir.
Virginia.
All right. When we come back, where are the Vols? Rivals has updated its basketball recruiting rankings. We'll tell you where the Vols are. And we have a poll about how far you think this team can go. And it does not correspond with your recruiting rankings. I will just tell you that. It's Blaine and Mickey, 104.5 The Zone. Blaine and Mickey, 104.5 The Zone. Hanging out with you a couple more minutes here. 3HL will get you through the rest of your day, 3 to 6 on this beautiful Thursday. So Brandon Huntley Hatfield announced his reclassification. He's 6'9", 230. He reclassified himself into the class of 2021, and he committed to Tennessee. ESPN 100's number 19 overall player. So he joined 6'11", four-star Jonas Adu, who committed yesterday. So this Vols class now includes, at least for one rating service, the number 2 point guard, Kennedy Chandler, the number 7 center, Adu, the number 11 small forward, Jemai Meshack, and the number 1 power forward prospect from 2022, who reclassified for 2021, and that's Huntley Hatfield. Rivals actually has that commitment now on their board. I just updated, went to volquest.com. Tennessee, Blaine, is now number 2 behind only Michigan. And how about Juwan Howard in Michigan? That dude, they made with a deep run this year. He's got the number 1 recruiting class next year. Mr. Fab Five himself. But Tennessee, number 2, ahead of Duke at number 3. And if you're a Tennessee fan, you hate hearing this. Alabama's number 4 right now. Rivals, and then Kentucky, of course, because it's Kentucky. Florida State, 6. Kansas, 7. You know, because their coach got a lifetime contract in the middle of the FBI and an NCAA investigation. That's still one of my all-time favorite sports stories. Georgetown, 8. UCLA, 9. Memphis, number 10. So two schools in Tennessee. two schools in the top 10, but right now Tennessee Vols number two. So the Vols are doing so well in recruiting. I thought, well, let's throw this question up on the Blaine and Mickey, because you'd said we need some kind of poll. We got to ask people, like, how are they feeling about this? So I thought, let's ask them how they feel about postseason success, because that's one thing about Coach Barnes. Great dude. Amazing recruiter. Look at the guys he's landing.
Yeah, man.
Let's see how people feel. Here were the four different answers you could choose. So this is the question. Blaine and Mickey, at Blaine and Mickey, A-N-D. Mickey, go there. Follow us on Twitter, please. We'd love to have you do it. Interact with us on the show. Based on this current recruiting class for Vol Hoops, how far do you think this team can go next season? Here are the four answers. First round loss, round of 32, Sweet 16, or, since there's only four choices, Elite 8 or higher. What do you think has the most response of those things? They're the number two recruiting class in the country right now per Rivals. Fans have got to be fired up, right? What do you think the number one answer is out of those four?
Well, I'm going to just tell you what I would guess. I would say 32, and I know that's probably wrong, but because I would hope that, you know, the youngsters are going to impact the roster, that maybe Barnes learned a little bit this year that, hey, I got to let them know that they are the dudes earlier. I know you got to, you know, let them earn it too at the same time, but he kind of let the process play itself out. And I think ultimately then that changed the veterans' roles. How about this? He came in highly acclaimed. He's our guy. He's the dude. Yeah. Put him out there and let him grow and let the team grow sooner than later, because you know ultimately that's where you're going to go.
Yep.
And I hate that, because everything against what I think about how you should earn your job. But if you know he's better than what you got to put him out there and find so everybody can settle into their roles on the basketball team. I say 32. I think he'll do a little bit different this year.
32 round of, I absolutely agree with you. Oh my gosh, that was a great point. He learned a lot. You got a couple of guys who are projected to be first round picks. If that's what you're going to do, if you're going to get one and done guys, then you got to just say, okay, these are the guys. That's just the way it is. We may stink like Cal. He'll let them stink at the beginning of the season, or they'll, and I know this year was an anomaly, but he never seems to sweat early season losses. Yeah. Oh, we'll figure it out. There's a bunch of 18-year-olds. They'll figure it out. I mean, here we go. I mean, they got all these dudes.
Well, they got to figure out how to play together when you're usually the stud guy on your team. And yep. Now all of a sudden you own another stud. I mean, you're on there with a whole bunch of studs and you're trying to say, yeah, okay, how do we share the ball? So ultimately, sometimes they don't know that in between. Some guy, I'm either going to be on that score, or guess what? I'm either that in between, and now I'm going to be hesitant. And, oh, should I shoot? The coach don't want me to shoot. He want me to pass right here. Now and all of a sudden you're thinking, instead of just playing fluently and just playing it just like it's AAU. And that's what happens, because guys want to do what the coach wants them to do, but ultimately you got to, you know, meet that happy medium and figure it out.
Here's the leading answer. First round loss, 37%.
I figured that.
I mean, we put this poll up and Lucas goes, you're going to bring out every negative response on this. First round loss, 37%. Round of 32, you got to make at least a round of 32. 21%, that's the third answer. The second answer is Sweet 16. That puts you playing into the second week of the tournament. Sweet 16, Elite 8 or higher, only 18%. That got the least amount of votes so far. We'll update this again tomorrow. 37% with the number two recruiting class, say, first round loss. Man, yeah. Come on, guys.
That's what I'm getting to, because, yeah, you number two, them dudes are elite, elite. I mean, they should just be able to go straight to the NBA.
Yeah. Yes. That's who they are at this point. Yes. Yeah. Well, regardless, it's going to be fun to watch. We'll be watching it. We'll be keeping you updated on everything. But right now, time for us to get out of here. Our Thursday wraps up. Your Thursday will keep going with 3HL. And we will see you tomorrow on Friday as we get the weekend started here at 1 o'clock. Buck Rising will join us, and AD from Central Florida, Terry Mahajer. And yes, I know him. I used to work with him. They putting Twitter handles on jerseys. They got Gus Malzahn. This guy's been on the College Football Playoff Committee. We got lots to discuss. He's an interesting dude. You won't want to miss any of it. That's tomorrow from 1 to 3. As of now, time for us to get out of here. Peace.
No doubt. And as always, happy Thursday!